This is Fresh Air. My guest, Yorgi Arbatov, has written an insider's view of Soviet politics. He describes himself as not a dissident or an enemy of the system, but as someone who has lived and willingly worked within it. Arbatov is best known to American political analysts as Russia's leading expert on the United States. In 1967, he founded an institute devoted to studying the U.S. and Canada. Arbatov has been a member of the Central Committee of the Communist Party and the Supreme Soviet. He advised six Soviet leaders from Khrushchev to Yeltsin. Arbatov's institute often hosted American political experts. In the introduction to Arbatov's new book, The System, journalist Strobe Talbert writes, "Arbatov and his colleagues were on the whole gracious and helpful, but they were also our sparring partners in what were often rather tedious and exasperating debates." Arbatov thinks of himself as one of the people who helped reform the Soviet Union by working within the system. Soviet dissidents have been celebrated in the West. I asked him if he thinks the contributions of insiders like himself have been overlooked.
I am sure it was the dissidents were so easy to recognize, and I don't want to deny that many of them, not all of them, but many of them were not only honest, but very people with courage, with guts, who really could risk and were ready to risk. But, you know, there were a handful with very, very small influence. But in addition, there were thousands and thousands of people who worked from within, who tried to make the change, and who had also to risk, not to such degree as dissidents, but they had to risk their career, their well-being, their reputation. And anyway, they did the major work. It started not because of the dissidents, the perestroika and Gorbachev and all of it. It started because the situation became ripe inside of the country. Dissidents helped to do it to some degree, but this, you know, influence from without couldn't do the thing alone. It was absolutely necessary to have efforts on both sides.
In your memoir, you write, you cannot demand the self-sacrifice of a Sakharov, of everyone. Now, your father was imprisoned under Stalin for counter-revolutionary behavior. What was the lesson you got out of your father's imprisonment?
Oh, I got it even before. And I write, I think, about it there. I learned it as a young boy, actually. I was still in high school, that one can be arrested without any guilt. And even destroyed. A lot of friends of my father, of my parents, and a lot of, parents of my friends were arrested, disappeared, perished in prison. And I learned at this time still that you can become a victim without committing any crime.
So you must have grown up, though, really, like, hating and fearing the system before you ended up working within it. I mean, it just seems you'd have to hate a system that unjustly imprisoned your own father.
Well, you know, I didn't understand that the system imprisoned my father. I understood, like many people otherwise, maybe it was a compromise with your own intellect, but you had to come to peace with this life. So you explained to yourself that these are distortions, gross distortions made by some villains who got to the leading positions, and there were some good things, etc. And I would say that you cannot paint the past, though it was mostly very, very, I would say, cruel and unjust, but you cannot paint it only one black color, you know. This was the period of when people become literate. After the revolution, immediately 80% of our population was illiterate. When there was development, spectacular development of our science and of many fields of our art, everything was not so one-sided and so easy. And we could, I fought for this country. It is not for this system, but for my country. For my country, I fought against Hitler, and we were allies in this time, and I have a clear consciousness in this sense.
Now, you became the Soviet Union's leading scholar of American politics. What got you interested in America?
You know, I became sick in 1944. I had was seriously sick and was honorably discharged from the army. And I was, at this time, 21 year old. I was a retired captain. And I had to think, what will I do in the future? So I went to university, to the Department of International Relations, and then we had to make another choice, what country to pick out for study. And I think at this time it was very natural that I picked out United States. Mm-hmm. It's interesting country. It was our ally. And all of us had hopes that this alliance will overlive the war and our victory, which I'm sorry to say was not so, turned out to be different.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Yorgi Arbatov, who is the head of Russia's Institute on the United States and Canada. He's considered Russia's leading Americanist, and he's written a new memoir called The System, An Insider's Life in Soviet Politics. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Yorgi Arbatov, a Russian scholar of American politics, and for years he was a key insider in the Soviet system and advised several Soviet leaders, including Gorbachev, Brezhnev, Andropov.
And Yeltsin.
And Yeltsin, that's right. Now he's advising Yeltsin. Well, you write that in the 1950s, the Communist Party realized its need for intellectuals to prepare positions and arguments, to improve the art of persuasion, and to make the party's point of view more attractive at home and abroad. Now, was that your primary role and how you saw yourself as an intellectual?
No, I was never had assignment to participate in propaganda. And in this sense, I think my image is not correct here in this country. They think that I was the spokesman, that I had to somehow persuade people here, to be an agent of influence, etc., which is wrong. What I did here, speaking in media, writing articles, etc., it was completely on my own risk, and quite a few times I got into trouble. My assignment was to study the country and to report about my institute's political analysis.
What's an example of something you got into trouble for?
Well, for instance, in 1978, I have written an article in Newsweek. And there I ended with a sentence which sounded approximately like this, that, you know, I was during the war fighting at the front, but I returned home. My father was participating in civil war, but he returned home. I participated in the Second World, I returned home. If there will be another war, there will nobody will remain to return home. You cannot win. You cannot wage nuclear war. Few years later, it became official policy of both countries, mine and yours. But at this time, it was heresy. And I was really criticized more than once, etc.
Which is once verbal criticism?
Verbal, but very serious one from the leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the militaries were dissatisfied with it. Another time I mentioned that we have also military-industrial complex. And it was reported, it was at a meeting and with Americans, it was reported in the press. I had again some troubles. But I was very calm about these troubles. I took it as part of small risk of the job. And you have either to be honest or you have to quit the job.
Did being a scholar of the West ever make you want to leave the Soviet Union for the United States or Canada, the two countries that you are studying, because in part of the greater intellectual freedom in those two countries?
To be honest, I envy it sometimes, part of the freedom. On the other side, I see also limitation to the freedom of my colleagues here, which are a different kind. It is not censorship, but it is obedience to some of the other set of rules of the game, of what is tolerated by the establishment and the society, and they are also rather careful. But I never had a wish to flee. You know, of course, would it be threat to my life and life of my family, maybe I would think it differently. And the first time I thought about it was during the coup, that if fascism comes to my country, I will have to flee, if I can. But in this situation, you mostly cannot do it. Otherwise, I always wanted to stay in the country. It's my country, and I have to share its destiny, and I don't want to leave.
We're hearing President Bush in this presidential campaign take a lot of credit for ending the Cold War. From your perspective, how much credit does President Bush deserve?
For winning the Cold War or for ending the Cold War?
For ending the Cold War.
Well, quite honestly, it was done already before he became the president. And the initiative belonged to us. And I'm proud about it. I think the Nobel Prize Committee was very correct to give the Nobel Prize for Peace to Gorbachev. But I would say that it was good that President Reagan followed the lead. And then President Bush picked it up and now pursues a policy which is consistent with this.
You know, for years you were the scholar of the Soviet Union's enemy. Now you're the scholar of the country that the Soviet Union would like to have aid from. And I wonder if that's changing your position within Russia and changing what people want from you.
You know, I don't regard United States as an enemy for quite a while already. And I understood that there is a sort of a mirror, law of mirror reflection in policy. If you do something bad, the other side will follow you. If you do something good, maybe the other side will pick it out also. And therefore, I think the policy begins at home always, also foreign policy. And I thought since we changed our policy, I was hopeful, and these hopes were not groundless, that United States will also change their policy. As to cooperation, you know, I wouldn't ask United States for money. I think this is not only humiliating, but it is wrong. What we need from United States, I think it is consistent foreign policy, which makes it possible for us to disarm, to spend less and less on armaments. I think it will be useful for both sides. And the other thing, we need your know-how. We are building a new economy, which has to be market economy, and here we have a close to zero experience, and you have a lot of experience. I think here you could help us a lot in working out program, in training our specialists, etc.
If you had your way, would the Communist Party still exist, but a reformed version of it?
You know, my opinion was for quite a while already that the Communist Party has to split. At least the social democratic part of it should form an independent social democratic party. The Communists should remain. Maybe there will be some other groups. And this was in the debates in the inner circle since maybe 87, 88. And would Gorbachev have guts to do it? I think we would have maybe more normal transitional period and much better successes in economic reform and in democratic development as well.
You, over the years, spoke on a lot of American TV shows, giving your perspective and the Soviet point of view in debates about international politics. Of the TV shows that you've done over the years, which did you find to be the most comfortable for you, and which were you the most cautious about going on because you felt you wouldn't be treated fairly?
You see, I was ready to do it again. It was on my own risk, practically in almost all programs. I wouldn't go to Evans and Novak, for instance.
You wouldn't
or
go
McLaughlin's
to
group.
Okay, McLaughlin, what was the first? I'm sorry, what was the first one that you mentioned?
Evans and Novak.
Oh, okay.
They are just crying at each other. I prefer programs where one can, like with you, you have some time, you can explain yourself, and even if the other side disagrees, but both of you can put down your arguments in a proper way. I dislike this short morning news, you know, because you have to get very early. You go there, you prepare yourself, then you have 1 minute and a half, and then this is out. And you are very often asked an absolutely irrelevant question.
Have you given a lot of advice over the years to other Russians about how to express themselves on American television?
You know, I never was regarded as an expert on public relations or something like this, but just because I had good relations with some of the leaders, I dared to give them advice. For instance, I told Gorbachev more than once to be not so long-winded and to give a chance to the journalists to ask him questions at the press conferences. And so sometimes I have given advice.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking to us today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Terry.
Yorgi Arbatov directs the Institute for the USA and Canada in Russia. He's the author of the new book, The System, An Insider's Life in Soviet Politics. This is Fresh Air.